Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in. A very happy Friday to you. Really glad to have you listening, because we're going to hear from another couple that I just think, wow, their story just captivated me. I prayed for these precious people. So honored to meet them. Dr. Kent Brantley and his wife, Amber. Kent, you might have heard about him on the news. He was a medical missionary in Africa during the Ebola outbreak, and he contracted the deadly virus himself. He and his wife were all over the national news, and one thing that stood out to me as I watched Dr. Kent Brantley answer interview questions was this: his gentle, humble, sincere heart for Jesus, that he was simply just doing what Christ asked him to do. We're going to hear his story. Title of his book, of their book, Kent and Amber's book, is Called for Life: How Loving Our Neighbor Led Us into the Heart of the Ebola Epidemic. So let me tell you about them. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Kent Brantley and his wife Amber served as medical missionaries in Monrovia, Liberia, with the medical arm of Samaritan's Purse. After contracting Ebola virus in summer of 2014, Dr. Brantley was evacuated to Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, where he recovered and was later reunited with his family. Now serving as the medical missions advisor for Samaritan's Purse, Dr. Brantley and Amber and their two children are based in Texas. Kent and Amber, so honored to meet you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Susie.
So good to meet you. Well, we love to start out our conversations talking scripture. We love the Word of God and Live the Promise. And one of the reasons we do this is because if you've got a verse, either a life verse or just one you've been thinking about these days, and you share it and you share why it means so much to you, it brings it to life for our listeners. And so we'll start with you, Amber. Do you have either a life verse or just a verse you've been pondering these days you can share with us?
There's a verse that I like to share under my signature when we're doing book signings and things, and it's from Leviticus 19, an old passage that says, "You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself, for I am the Lord." And love your neighbor as yourself, we're familiar with that. It's all over Jesus' Gospels too, and he even took it a step further when he said in Matthew 5 that you shall love your neighbor, but also love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you. And that's our message. You know, that's what motivated Kent and I to move across the world, was, you know, to somehow through our lives and hands and testimony to love our neighbors.
And something that's interesting, Amber, is this is not something that you just followed Kent. Oh, you know, sometimes you hear that a husband has a call to missionaries, to be a missionary, and the wife will follow and trust him and become a missionary. But God had been preparing you in your heart before that. What, right?
Yeah, very much so. I grew up Christian heritage. My parents are strong believers, and their parents are. I'm the daughter of a preacher, and we grew up doing, you know, mission trips or visiting the missionaries that our church supported. And so I was raised in this world that the Christian faith and the church is so much bigger than what I know in my small town in Texas. And so I'm so thankful for that. And they really brought me up to love people and care for people with, you know, less material than we had. And it was an eye-opening experience for me as a young person. And then throughout college, the Lord was working on me and showing me that I could be a missionary myself. And so when I met Kent doing a mission internship in Honduras, and so we've always had that in common and that shared calling for our lives, and it just made perfect sense for both of us and for our family to pursue that together.
Wow. And the idea that your parents led you outside of your world to show you another world, I mean, changed your context forever. And I just think that's one of the most powerful things a parent can do. Dr. Kent, how about you? Do you have a verse that you could share with us?
One of my favorite verses is Mark 6:34. That says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. And when I share that with people, it seems kind of like a strange verse to choose, because it, standing alone, it sounds odd. But when you look at the context of that verse, you realize how profound it was that when Jesus saw that large crowd, he had compassion on them. John the Baptist had just been killed, and Jesus was dealing with the emotional weight of that reality, that not only his cousin, but John the Baptist, the great prophet of whom Jesus said there is none greater in the kingdom of heaven, had just been executed. And you also have the 12 disciples coming back from the limited commission full of excitement and joy about all they've taught and done and what they've seen God do and the miracles that have happened. And these two very different emotional worlds are colliding at the same time. And it says there are so many people pressing in around them, the crowd trying to get to Jesus, that they don't even have time to eat. And Jesus says to his disciples, let's go away to a quiet place and get some rest. And when they arrive at that quiet place, they meet this large crowd of hungry, needy people. And instead of seeing the inconvenience of their presence or being frustrated at the need, the never-ending need, in a moment when I would be short-tempered and frustrated, it says Jesus had compassion on them. Mm. And that, when I think about that verse and about Jesus' heart in that passage, it helps me understand what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus said there are the two most important things in life, the two greatest commandments are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he said the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself.
Powerful. And that really is the essence of your story from start to finish, although God's not finished with you yet. But I would love for you to share, Kent, how long were you and Amber married before you felt the call to go to Africa? Or did you know that while you guys were dating and engaged? Explain that story and how it unfolded.
Well, as Amber said, from the time we met, we shared this calling together. And it was one of the things that drew us together and to each other. And we actually were friends for about 5 years before we got married, before I realized I needed to marry this girl.
A little slow on the uptake, are you?
Yeah. I think she had to figure it out long before that. Yeah. It took me a while.
Go ahead.
That was our shared calling from the beginning. And as you know, the road of medical education is a long one. And so Amber patiently waited for me while I finished medical school and residency training. And then we finally set out together after 5.5 years of marriage and as many or more years of medical training. We finally were setting out for our first real full-time, long-term mission work. And we had been in Liberia about 9 months before I got sick.
Wow. Remember reading a story in your book of a woman who contracted Ebola and who traveled via taxi and then motorcycle. And when it was all said and done, your team had determined she'd been in contact with about 80 people. And is that when you realized you were about to face a significant battle? This is before you got sick, if I remember right.
Yes. When that happened, that was actually beginning of April, end of March, beginning of April of 2014. And that really was one of the major turning points when we realized this thing could get huge. In reality, we didn't end up seeing a patient with Ebola in our facility until early June. So we had a couple of months of intense preparation and living under this looming threat of what we knew could happen at any time. And then in June is when Ebola really came to our doorstep finally.
And Kent, what were some of the precautions and preparations you had to do, you know, to take to get ready for what you suddenly realized this is coming to our doorstep?
When we heard about the Ebola outbreak that started in Guinea near the end of March, I worked with a really great team of doctors, both missionary doctors as well as Liberian physicians there at our hospital. And we met together that first Monday morning after hearing the news over the weekend and began preparing our hospital for kind of a worst-case scenario. And that included finding a manual online published by WHO and CDC called Management of Viral Hemorrhagic Fever in the African Healthcare Setting.
Wow.
And one of our doctors, Dr. Debbie Eisenhut, printed that manual off, put it in a three-ring binder, and we consumed that manual. And she actually created a curriculum for training every member of our hospital staff, from the doctors and nurses to the janitors and cashiers, on every aspect of Ebola. What is Ebola? How is it transmitted? How do you prevent it? How do you treat it? How do you mix chlorine solution? How do you put on the personal protective equipment? And we did that because we knew that if a patient with Ebola showed up at our hospital and we weren't prepared, it would cost the lives of our friends and colleagues and coworkers. Hmm. So that was really the impetus for starting those preparations. And then we also built or converted our chapel into a small isolation unit so that if a patient showed up, we would have a safe place to isolate and treat that patient. And we lived in that state of preparation and perpetual training and learning the protocols better and improving our processes and getting better equipment through Samaritan's Purse for 3 months before we finally saw a patient.
Wow. Thank the Lord you had the foresight and the discernment and the wisdom to do that. I mean, imagine if you didn't. Wow. Amber, I mean, I know there are certain women that are wired. I mean, you obviously are wired for missions, but doesn't mean you don't struggle with fear, I would think. So how did you reconcile your fears with your faith? This is before your husband got sick, but amidst the Ebola threat, are you someone who's just not bent towards fear?
I used to not be. Probably as much as I am now. I was probably a little naive, and I think I was gifted a measure of grace during that time beyond my own ability. While Kent was engaged with Ebola patients, I felt confident in the science and the procedures and what we knew then of how the virus was transmitted and how he could protect himself from it and the other team. And I relied on that and trusted in him, knowing how meticulous and scientific and careful and cautious. He's not a risk taker. He's not an adrenaline junkie. And so I trusted him that he was following the protocol and relied on that. I wasn't afraid of him coming home to us. I made him change his clothes and
burn them
sour before being with us. And he was so careful about going to the marketplace with kids. And we stayed home a lot more than we had been. But that was just out of precaution more than fear. I think it was just, being a good steward of what we had. But
wow. We need to take a short break, Amber, but when we come back, sure. I want to talk about just when Kent started to first feel those symptoms and how you found out. I know some of this from reading this book, but I just wanted you to tell it in your own words. I am talking to Dr. Kent and Amber Brantley and talking about their story about Kent, how he contracted Ebola, how God met them, the national news reports, and how they came through it all. The title of their new book is Called for Life, How Loving Our Neighbor Led Us into the Heart of the Ebola Epidemic. More with them in a moment. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson, and this is The Promise. Really honored to be talking to Dr. Kent Brantley and his dear wife, Amber. They've got a new book out titled Called for Life, How Loving Our Neighbor Led Us into the Heart of the Ebola Epidemic. And Kent was the one, you heard about him on the news, I'm sure, who contracted, he's the doctor who contracted Ebola. And we watched that story unfold on the national news. And here's a quote from their great book, Called for Life. I mean, it honestly does read like a novel. They write, we didn't believe that because we were there as medical missionaries, we'd automatically be divinely protected from getting Ebola. The Bible says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline. Although Ebola is a scary disease, we were not scared. We were not afraid of dying. Missionaries have died on their chosen fields for centuries. And really applaud your courage and your conviction. It's such a great example for us all. And Dr. Kent, I wonder if you wouldn't mind giving us some background on what Ebola is actually and how it is passed from person to person.
Ebola is a virus that causes a myriad of symptoms put together called viral hemorrhagic fever. It's thought to exist in its natural reservoir in the bats in East and Central Africa, and now we know it's also in West Africa. And it first enters the human population when a person has contact with an animal, a bat or a monkey, that has been infected with the virus. But then that person gets sick and they have high persistent fever and other general vague symptoms like nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, muscle pain, headache. Ebola is really most well known for its dramatic symptoms that it sometimes causes, which are highlighted in novels and movies, which are bleeding symptoms, bleeding from every orifice of your body and internal bleeding. And that does happen to some patients, but not all patients. In fact, a lot of patients who die from Ebola die from dehydration and septic shock. But Ebola is spread from person to person through contact with the body fluids of a sick individual. So when the person is sick and they start bleeding or they're vomiting or having diarrhea, and the people tending to them and helping clean them up and nurse them, trying to nurse them back to health, come in contact with those body fluids, and then they themselves get infected. And it's a horrific, scary disease. It has a very high mortality rate, and that's what makes it so mysterious and feared all around the world, really.
Wow. You made the decision at one point to evacuate Amber and your children. Talk about what surrounded that, Kent, first, and then Amber, I want you to talk about what was going through your heart and mind at the time. How did you come to that decision at that point to evacuate them?
Sure. You know, Susie, you talked about that patient who came through Monrovia by taxi and motorcycle and had all those contacts. That was a week after we first heard about the outbreak. So we were just learning all there was to know about Ebola and how to treat it and manage it. And we had contingency plans in place with different triggers for different steps of the contingency plan. And one of those was, if Ebola comes to Monrovia, we're going to evacuate our spouses and dependents of the necessary staff here at the hospital. And so that trigger was met when that patient came to Monrovia. We sent Amber and the kids back to America. But then in the middle of May, we had seen more than a month with no new cases in Liberia. And so Amber and the children were allowed to return. And by the time Ebola came back in June, it was a different ballgame altogether. We were prepared, we were trained, and we had a different contingency plan in place and a different approach to engaging with this disaster that was coming to our area.
And Amber, I know you missed your husband, your kids missed their dad, so you came back. How long were you back before you went back to Texas, I believe it was, back to the States with your parents?
We left on April, the 1st of April, the 2nd of April, and we were away for 4 weeks, I think, and we met up with Kent in Europe for a conference that we had planned on attending. The Christian Medical and Dental Association puts on an education conference for missionaries. So we met him there and still didn't know if we'd be cleared, allowed to return from Samaritan's Purse to Liberia. But then Liberia was declared Ebola free. And so we came back with Kent from Europe to Liberia in May. And we'd been gone for a total of 6 weeks, I think, by that time, before we were cleared to return. So.
And then you were back. We have a break coming up in about 2 minutes, but I got to know this. So you were back with Kent for how long before you left again?
We got back in early May, and the kids and I left again July 20th for a planned trip to attend my brother's wedding in Texas, and Kent was scheduled to come with us the following week and celebrate the wedding and be with family for a brief vacation before we all went back to Liberia. Our plans changed, of course. Kent became sick during that time. We didn't return. So
you're going for this family trip, and that's when you're home and when you find out about Kent. Again, we have just a break here in a moment. But during that time when you were able to return to Liberia, and then you're just going home for a family event, was fear or did you have a sense of anything, or were you feeling like we're good, we're good to go?
Not at all. We left saying, we'll see you. We'll be back in 3 weeks. We didn't pack like we'd be leaving permanently. We really packed quite a messy suitcase at the last minute because we had been so busy. But so we just packed, some clothes and headed for a vacation and didn't say goodbye to people or anything. It was just this, we'll be right back. We'll see you later. What can we bring you from America? And that sort of departure. We weren't at all prepared for
what was coming.
Not at all thinking that Kent was going to get sick and we'd not be returning home.
More with the Brantleys in a moment. This is where the story really turns. Don't go away. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. Really honored and blessed to be talking to Dr. Kent Brantley and his dear wife, Amber, co-authored a book titled Called for Life, How Loving Our Neighbor Led Us Into the Heart of the Ebola Epidemic. And again, you may have heard about Kent's story on the national news when he contracted Ebola as a medical missionary doctor. And so, Kent, if you don't mind, you've been caring for patients until you yourself got a fever. I'd love for you to just take us back to that situation. What happened when you first started to feel sick? What was going through your mind, and what were your next steps that you took?
Susie, the first morning I woke up sick, It was Wednesday, July 23rd. And I really thought I shouldn't have eaten that pizza with Tabasco sauce last night. It was that simple. I had an upset stomach. I didn't feel good. Something wasn't right. But I felt a little warm, and I wasn't naive enough to think that it was impossible for me to get Ebola. I've been working in what was quickly becoming the world's worst Ebola outbreak in history, and I knew that I was not invincible. And I knew that it was the better part of valor to stay home from work that day and just do some administrative work on the computer at home. And so that's what I did. But by lunchtime that day, instead of feeling better like I expected to, I thought it would all blow over in the morning. But instead, at lunchtime, my fever was climbing and I was starting to feel worse. And I held on to that hope that it was not Ebola, that it was something else, malaria or dengue fever or anything else. But I treated myself like it was Ebola. I isolated myself in my house and I didn't have contact with anybody from that point on.
And boy, it was so interesting how you were back and forth with your colleague in connection, and you took the malaria test and that proved negative, but you're taking the precautions. Like Amber said, you're not taking risks. I think that was really amazing. There was a point where they took an Ebola test and it came back negative. Take it from there.
Sure. We ran a test that first day, and we didn't get the results until the next day, but the first test came back negative, which was a relief, but it really didn't mean much because our protocols that we were using at that time told us that in the first 72 hours of illness, a test can be negative, even if a patient really has Ebola. So we just referred to that as an indeterminate test, which meant I had to be in quarantine for 72 hours and then run another test, a confirmatory or definitive test. So I was relieved to have that first negative test, but I was frustrated that I'm going to have to stay in my house for 72 hours while my friends and colleagues are getting busier and busier in the treatment unit and things are just getting more and more overwhelming. And at the same time, over those first few days, I began feeling worse and worse, and I was taking treatment for malaria, even though I had had 3 negative tests, and I was taking antibiotics just in case it was something bacterial. And after a couple of days of illness, my colleague, Dr. John Fankhauser, came into my house and started an IV on me. He came in full personal protective equipment, just like we would wear to enter the Ebola treatment unit. And he started an IV in my arm and started giving me fluids because he didn't want me to get dehydrated.
Mm. Love really reading the exchange back and forth between you and him and how he really took such care of you. And amidst all of that, I mean, thinking as I was reading, you're working 17-hour days. It would be easy to reason. My immunities are run down. I'm just plain sick. And yet the wisdom for you to take the precautions that you did. And I mean, the whole thing about how your hearts are so knit together with your team just really inspired me so much. Help me remember, Kent, how many days you were sick or how long you were sick before you needed to alert Amber, I'm not feeling so well. Don't want you to worry, but I'm not feeling so well. How long a time span was that?
Well, Amber left on the 20th, which is a Sunday, and she got back to America on Monday. And so we talked on the phone Monday and Tuesday. And Wednesday, I woke up feeling bad, and I thought, I cannot tell my wife that I'm at home sick in the middle of an Ebola outbreak without something more to tell her.
Hmm.
So I chose not to call her on Wednesday. And on Thursday, when I got that first negative test result back, I felt like I had a little more information to tell her. So I called her on Thursday and told her, hey, I'm sick. I don't feel good. I have a fever. But my first test was negative. And we're just going to wait it out and run a test again in a couple of days.
Well, Kent, you know that we as women have the spiritual gift of catastrophizing, right? But Amber, I love that you're not so given to fear. I am. It's a struggle with, and I got Lyme disease in my early marriage, bit by tick, dropped off, never saw the tick, and it ravaged my 20s. And it was so I do bend towards fear, and I just always admire women who don't. But even so, your husband's in the middle of an Ebola outbreak, treating patients. What happened for you when he said, I'm sick, first test turned out negative? You're smart enough to know that doesn't tell everything. What was going through your head?
I think I breathed heavily from that point on. I knew it was serious that he was sick and that, you know, I knew what the possibilities before us were, but we still hoped that it was malaria or even dengue fever, which is horrible in itself, but not as horrible as Ebola. And I'm not generally hysterical. So I just tried to be calm. I knew it was really serious. I talked to my parents about it because I was staying with them, and just asked that they pray and not really share widely that this was happening. I don't know. I was worried, but still clinging to hope that this will be taken care of. It's something different. He's been so careful.
Yeah.
And I was just still really hopeful.
Hard stuff, though. And then, Kent, your second test came back, and what, you know, you're not feeling well, but one of the first things you say is, how am I going to tell Amber? Explain how you got the news from your colleague and just what you can remember after that.
I was asleep in my bed, and my colleague, John Finkhauer, woke me up. And he was standing beside my bed in his personal protective equipment. I thought he was waking me up to tell me that he was leaving. I didn't like being left alone. And I thought he was waking me up to let me know that he was leaving so I wouldn't wake up and find out that I was all alone. And then I realized my other colleague, Dr. Lance Plyler, was standing at my bedroom window. And I sat up and tried to clear my mind and figure out what was happening when it's very plainly said, Kent, bud, we got your test result, and I'm really sorry to tell you it's positive for Ebola. It was just that matter of fact, and he wasn't cold or harsh about it. It was just very matter of fact.
And all you can think about is your dear wife, and so how did you tell her?
Well, Susie, the truth is I don't really remember how I told her. I remember looking at Lance and John and saying, okay, what's our plan? What's next? What are we going to do? And how am I going to tell Amber? And then I picked up my phone and called her. And there are a lot of details of my illness that I don't remember, but I do remember that I picked up the phone and called her right away.
And then, Amber, you take it from there.
I was anticipating his call because I knew that they were going to do the lab work, and I was waiting on pins and needles all day Saturday for his call. The evidence had been mounting against him that it was anything other than Ebola, and I think his doctors were beginning to see, you know, as he was getting sicker and not getting better and his fever was increasing, I think everyone was not wanting to say it, but seeing that this was really possible that he did have Ebola. And I was seeing that too, but still really hoping that he didn't. Of course, he called and I answered really quickly because I was just nervous. And he said it just as plainly as his doctor had said it to him, because how else can you break news like that?
Yeah.
The test result came back and it's positive for Ebola. And there's not a lot else to say about that. I wanted to say something that would encourage him or strengthen him in some way, but I couldn't come up with what that might be. I just told him, I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. And I cried, and he had other people to call. He needed to call his parents and tell them. And so it was a short phone call, short and sweet. And and then I just fell into a puddle of tears and cried and called my parents. And we had a moment together like that, my parents and me, and we cried and prayed together. And Franklin Graham called me and tried to encourage me. He didn't have a lot to say either. And then it just became, you know, in a matter of just a few hours, it became news. And so we got down to the business of privatizing our pictures and websites and Facebook and all that kind of stuff that you don't think until you see a picture of yourself in your 90 at the hospital holding your newborn baby that you put on your blog years and years ago, that
wow,
people are going to be seeing that. You know, so many people will be seeing that, even though you put it on the internet yourself, that you just don't think that that will find its way to the news one day. So, so we worked on that sort of thing and notifying our prayer support network and our church that Kent was sick with Ebola. And so prayer chains started immediately. And I'm thankful for that. And I was very well supported by my family and his and our friends and networks. And
so moved by one of the friends of Kent's that texted you, Kent, and said something the effect of, you and Amber became missionaries, went to Liberia so that others could know Christ and know him more, or something like that. And he just said, you know, millions of people are pressing in and praying. And it was such a great picture because it wasn't just the people in Liberia that were being impacted by your ministry, but by the very fact of the need within within your health and your marriage and your family called many people to the throne of God. And draw, you know, and that's the thing. We draw near to him. He draws near to us. And we don't like crises, but God uses them. And we need to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about just how they treated Kent, and then when the decision was made to bring him back to the States, how people responded to that, to him coming back, and how he knew, when he knew he was going to recover from this thing, from Ebola virus. More with Kent and Amber Brantley in a moment. Welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, having a really compelling conversation with Dr. Kent Brantley and his wife, Amber. They've co-authored a book called For Life, How Loving Our Neighbor Led Us Into the Heart of the Ebola Epidemic. We're at the point of the story now where Kent has called Amber, who's back in the States, saying the Ebola test is positive. And Kent, you're back in Liberia dealing with the sickness. And wow, I can just only imagine, you were so busy being sick, but just did you deal with all kinds of fear, or what did you have a sense of God's grace, or both? What was going through your heart and mind at the time?
Susie, it's hard to explain how I felt during that time, because on one hand, I felt a tremendous amount of peace. That night when Lance and John told me my test result, I was incredibly calm, and it was all very surreal and weighty, but calm and peaceful. And it was like, okay, let's make a game plan and move forward. And that peace persisted throughout my illness, that I never felt consumed by fear, but I certainly did deal with fear and anxiety, and that peace didn't take away the fear and anxiety, but it was present in spite of those other feelings.
Wow, amazing.
And as I got sicker, I got more and more anxious about being alone. And the team taking care of me there in Liberia was being stretched so thin, trying to manage the Ebola treatment unit with ever-increasing and rapidly increasing number of patients and the chaos that was developing around the country, and taking care of two of their own, as my friend Nancy and I both were diagnosed on the same day with Ebola. It was a really hard time. But I learned a lesson a long time ago that I've been processing for a decade now, or more than a decade. And that lesson was that God will give us everything we need to be faithful to him.
Wow.
That in terms of maybe material things, or he'll give me what I need to accomplish the task that is set out before me. But when I was laying there in my bed in Liberia, facing what felt like a death sentence, I came to the realization that nothing can separate me from the love of God, not even death itself. And really, what do I need in order to be faithful to God more than that reassurance? I didn't need a promise of healing. I didn't need I didn't even have to be reunited with my family. I just had to know that no matter what, whether I lived or died, nothing could separate me from the love of God.
What?
That didn't make me not afraid. But
we sure need to hear those stories, you know, when you're in the fire, when you're in the fire, that you testify that God's grace was near, because that is his promise. But to hear it is just so reassuring to our souls. How long were you there before they decided to fly you to the U.S.?
I think they started working on my evacuation almost as soon as I was diagnosed, maybe even before my diagnosis was confirmed. But it wasn't until the 1st of August that the plane was able to get there to transport me back to America. So I had been sick in Liberia for 10 days before I was evacuated.
Was there any resistance to bringing a patient with Ebola to the States?
Well, you would know that better than I would, because I wasn't exactly aware of current events at that time. Mm. But we all know about the fear and the panic that was really prevalent at that time when it was announced that they were going to bring a patient sick with Ebola back to America for treatment. And I'm really thankful to the people who saw past the fear through their lens of compassion to say, this is the right thing to do. We need to take care of these two individuals who are sick. And I'm thankful to all the people who did things that had never been done before, to fly a person who's sick with Ebola across the Atlantic Ocean and put them in an American hospital. And the team there at Emory, who were the first in America to ever care for a person with Ebola, and the people at Samaritan's Purse who did not give up until they were able to get somebody to bring me back. And I'm really thankful to all the people who were involved in that process.
We're so thankful as well. We only have a few minutes left, and I got to know a couple of things. Kent, when did you finally realize you're going to make it?
For me, the turning point really was after I had been in Emory for several days and my appetite came back. And after more than 2 weeks of having no appetite at all and being nauseated and all of that, when I desired food and was able to eat it and keep it down, that was for me the turning point when I said, okay, I think I'm going to make it.
Was it around that time you realized that you were on the world stage in the news?
Yeah, as my condition improved at Emory and I was able to connect to the outside world a little more, I started realizing what a big deal all of this had become. And it's still surreal, still hard for me to fathom why so many people are interested in our story. But we've been amazed time and time again at how God has used our story to impact people's lives. And really, that's why we wrote the book, is because we wanted to offer our story for God to use in people's lives. And we pray that that's the outcome of the book and of all of the sharing of our story that we've been able to do.
Well, I saw a couple of the media interviews you gave, Kent. I didn't see you in any Amber, but I want to say, Kent, you represented Christ so well. And Amber, you too, though, just reading your story and the way you love your husband, love your family, love Jesus, so absolutely amazing. There's a picture in the book, Amber, of you and Kent embracing for the first time after this whole ordeal. Take us to that point and say a word about it.
It was late August in Atlanta, and he'd been improving. He was out of bed and and getting healthier, but he was still needing a negative blood test. And the CDC wanted him to have two consecutive negative blood tests before they would release him upon the public in a way. So I was at lunch in the cafeteria at Emory University Hospital, and he called and said, "I think you need to come back over here quick."
Oh, lovely.
So I did, and his doctor was there just outside his room and had the door propped open and told both of us that his lab test had come back negative and he would be free to go. And so the nurses scrambled and got him clean clothes and showered and went through their process of exiting his room. And he came out in the hall to meet me, and that's the picture you see is of us hugging that first time he came out of his hospital room. And it was lovely to feel him next to me. He was thinner than the last time I'd held him like that, but I was really, really relieved.
You'll take him. This really could have gone, you know, any which way. And I'm just so thrilled, Amber, that God gave you more time with your dear husband. We just have a moment before I ask you guys to pray. But how has your relationship with God been impacted, Amber, by this experience?
In every way. I feel like I can be really honest with God, that I've wailed out and cried to him and asked him really hard questions this year of why us, not just why did we have to suffer this, but why did my husband survive it when so many others have lost theirs? And not only to Ebola, but we've had dear friends suffer this year. A good friend of mine has become a widow this year, and that's hard for me, and it's hard for her that, and so I think I feel more deeply for that. And so God and I have been on rocky terms sometimes, but I still feel so so grateful and thankful. And I still believe in his goodness and his faithfulness. And I think that it's been good for me to learn and to be able to share with others that God can handle those hard questions, and he can handle my crying out to him. And that's what I'm learning.
He's a father, you know, and I think these traumas and these sicknesses remind us that the veil really between heaven and earth is thin, and some of these questions we're going to get answered one day. And Kent, we got just a moment to pray, wondering if you would pray for that person listening today who's been dealing with fear, and God is inviting them to faith, to trust him. Would you pray?
Father God, you are good and faithful, and you promise that you will never leave us nor forsake us. God, I thank you for that promise. I pray you would give us faith to trust you in that. As the prophet Jeremiah says, that even as we remember the awful time of grieving loss that we've suffered, that your mercy is new every morning, that your faithfulness is great, and that your love is steadfast. Father, I pray that you would help us to grasp that reality, to give our lives to you, to trust that you are who you say you are, that you will be faithful, and that that's not you will set all things right. I thank you for your son Jesus and his faithfulness. His name we pray.
Amen. Dr. Kent and Amber, bless you and thank you for this time today. Appreciate it more than we can say.
Thank you, Susie.
Great conversation. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a little bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a blessed day.